all communications, however, in compliance with the Brown Act, the board cannot act on items not on the agenda. Presentations are limited to 3 minutes.
Okay. Tom Martin from the Garbage Company, South County Sanitary. The new phone books are out. I just wanted to point out to everybody that on page 564 in the yellow pages, there's a little cardboard fold-out. You should fold it out. It leaves you a tab. Everything you'd ever want to know about the recycling program or the compost program or anything else is in there. So if you have any questions about anything, this is the all source for it. Secondly, South County Sanitary has finally come into the 21st century. You can now pay your bills online at www.wasteconnectionswithans.com. You have to have a copy of your bill in front of you because you need that 10-11 digit number. I went online and I paid my mother-in-law's bill, so if I can do it, anybody can do it. It's there. Last thing is cleanup week. This year it's the second week in April, the 10th through the 14th. You don't have to remember the dates. Just remember it's the week before your income taxes are due. And you'll remember that you got to clean it up before you send in your taxes. All right. That's all I got.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment?
My name is Mark Wampler, Oceana resident. It was my hope that, what's the deal with that? It tells me something that possibly public comment is not viewed in very high regard with you, sir. I'm very discouraged with that. I believe we've taken two steps backwards just with this agenda alone. You know, why is it that the public has to come out and babysit? We shouldn't have to do that. These cameras shouldn't have to be here watching your every move, but they have to be, and we'll stay here, and we'll continue. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Okay, hearing none. Moving on to item number 4, review and approval of the minutes.
Mr. President, on the minutes of January 11th, it appears that Director Dahl was here twice, and Director Hill wasn't here at all, so I think we ought to fix that. And the last word, the end of number 1, roll call should be Hill, Director.
What?
The last line of number 1 on the minutes of January 11th should be Director Hill.
Okay. Is there any public comment on the minutes?
Yes, I do. December 14th, Mark is listed as being an Oceana resident. On December 21st, Mark is listed as being an Arroyo Grande resident.
I apologize.
And lo and behold, on January 11th, Mark is back in Oceano. So please get that straight. Thank you.
Any other public comments on the minutes? Okay, bringing it back to the board. Anyone else? Anyone here have anything to add or change?
I move that we accept the minutes of December 14th and January 11th as corrected.
Point of order there. I wasn't at one of the meetings. It has to be two separate
Thank you.
Motions.
We will take the December 14th minutes first.
I'll move that we accept the minutes of December 14th.
Second.
All those. Okay, reports. Would you introduce this item?
Oh, okay, yes. This evening we have with us Steve Tanaka. He's the Director of Water Resources with the Wallace Group. As you recall, the Board of Directors authorized the expenditure of some funds to jointly with the cities of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach to evaluate both desalinization and Nacimiento water. And Steve Tanaka is here this evening to give a presentation as to what the findings are.
Great. Thank you, Mitch. And good evening, Mr. President, members of the board, staff, and the public. Let me pass these out real quick, and I do apologize. I don't think I quite have enough to go around, but...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. And again, thanks you for letting me be here. I'm going to be going through both the, as Mitch had mentioned, both the Nacimiento and the desalination water studies that we provided for the three agencies. And this is kind of the third performance, so to speak. I did deliver the draft reports to City of Arroyo Grande and to Grover Beach over the past couple weeks. And so I believe what we're looking at for tonight would be your direction and feedback on the two studies that I'm going to present to you. And then I believe there's going to be a joint meeting, is that correct, Mitch, following this meeting with the other agencies to discuss findings and thoughts in regards to the studies?
To the best of my knowledge, there is not a joint meeting established to deal with these two issues. The joint meeting is to deal with fire consolidation.
Okay. So. I thought there was going to be one arranged for all the agencies.
There may be somebody doing that, but I think that what the other entities are waiting for is basically what the decision is here this evening, because I think everybody needs to know who the players are.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay, very good. So I'm going to just kind of dive right in, and what I am going to do is go through just very briefly the Nacimiento study, just kind of key in on the highlights. I'm going to do an overview of the desalination study, and then kind of a quick comparison and summary of the two, and then I'll open it up for questions. And of course, by any means, because there is to look at the overall feasibility of either of the two as a favorable water supply to meet those future needs. So we focused on what those technical merits and issues may be in regards to either the water system projects that we evaluated. What are their probable life cycle costs? What are some of the issues in regards to environmental concerns and permitting that we might foresee as part of implementation of a project of that nature? And then taking a look at what the overall implementation schedule would be for a project, either the DESAL or the Nacimiento project. And I'm going to start with the Nacimiento project. And as you know, the current Nacimiento project is under design. It is anticipated to be completed around year 2008. It's a 45-mile pipeline stretching from Lake Nacimiento with its current planned terminus at the city of San Luis Obispo's water treatment plant. So this study to bring water then to the South County essentially starts from that point at the city's water treatment plant, conveying that raw water an additional 18 miles to South County. That would entail transmission of that raw water to the Lopez Reservoir in Forbay, treating it at the treatment plant, at the Lopez plant, and then distributing it through the existing Lopez transmission and distribution infrastructure to the various agencies.
Well, excuse me. Uh-huh. Won't the first 45 miles have to be sized depending on whether we were going to take water down here or not?
Yes, that's correct. And that is one of the issues in evaluating the project, because at this point in time, the project, I don't know the exact capacity that the project was planned for originally, but when we started the study, there was 2,300 acre feet available hydraulically downstream of the city's water treatment plant. Since that time, the project team is looking at reducing and minimizing costs overall to the project as best they can. And they're already considering some reductions in the original alignment within that existing 45 miles. Based on talking with the commission, the understanding we have today is that the available capacity total downstream of the city's water plant is more on the order of about 2,100 acre feet per year. So that's their current, that's the current understanding of the status that we have of the design at this time. So, okay, and so that's the Nacimiento project. Again, it's about 18 miles of pipeline then to convey raw water from the city's water plant. There's an oil field project which would need to take their oil production water, and that water is planned to be conveyed to Arroyo Grande Creek. in the area of Lopez Forbe, that pipeline could potentially be used as part of the conveyance to get water to the project. The advantage of that would be that the project proponent would pay for those costs up front, and then that pipeline would be relinquished to the county. The downside to that is that the project proponent would also need to use that pipeline through its useful life, which could be 10 years or it could be longer, so it was really hard to really get a good, clear idea of when that pipeline would be available to convey water to the project. Okay, and so that was the Nacimiento project. We met with the county. We met with the design team. We took a look at what the current costs are to, are estimated to cost the city of San Luis Obispo, and we used that as our starting point then to take a look at what the overall capital O&M and life cycle cost of the Nacimiento project would be. And based on, based on our study, we estimate that the total life cycle cost for the water project for Nacimiento would be somewhere on the order of about $3,800 per acre foot. And that's, again, you know, this is accounting for what it would cost to get it to San Luis Obispo and then adding on the additional costs, design, permitting, construction, and all the different costs associated with the project, plus estimating annual O&M costs. Now, the one good thing is that the Nacimiento project, based on what they planned to be the current design pressure at the city's turnout, there would probably be enough pressure to drive the water all the way to Lopez without a pump station. So that was also considered as part of evaluation. The other important aspects to the Nacimiento project are things such as the entitlement contract, and those are some important considerations. And I'll kind of hit on those at the end of the project as well. But one of the key considerations is that this project is sort of parallel to the state water project in that it's not drought proof. Its delivery is 11 months out of the year, so you do have to plan for a 30-day maintenance period, just as you do with state water. So those are some of the issues relative to the project, and it also has a small level of uncertainty to it today, and that the current contract does have an opt-out clause. If the projects go over, it's about $3,800 per acre foot. And what we did on that too is we looked at the two different pipeline alternatives. And if you recall the Plains XP pipeline that we looked at, there was a cost advantage to receiving that pipeline for free, so to speak. Once the Plains XP folks were done with that pipeline, we estimated that overall life cycle cost to be more on the order of about $3,000 to $3,200 per acre foot because there were some cost savings there. But what we've kind of included in our summary here was the higher cost because we wanted to be a little bit on the conservative side, but also because we felt there was a higher level of uncertainty that that Plains XP project would move forward. So there was some uncertainty as to whether that project would actually move forward or not. Okay. Any other questions before I go into the desal? Okay. The next part of the second part of our study was to take a look at desalination. And as you know, today there's a number of plants being planned and designed throughout California. Years past, desalination was not considered viable. Membrane technologies have improved considerably over the years. Desalination is certainly becoming much more of a favorable project for a number of folks. You know, throughout the state and throughout the world, in fact. But there are a number of plants currently being planned here in California. As we took a look at the desalination project, we needed to, of course, key in on what some of the key considerations would be as we looked at the project. And one was what would be a good starting point for a logical location for that water treatment plant. Where do we get our supply from? Do we get it from local brackish wells? Do we do a seawater intake? And then we took a look at the technical aspects of the treatment process itself. And then, of course, some of the key considerations, as you know, are what are the energy costs and operating costs of a plant going to be? Because, as you know, O&M costs can be high with an RO plant, particularly in regards to energy costs. And what are some of the environmental and permitting issues that we might see with the project? By the way, one thing I did forget to mention on the Nacimiento project, we also kind of laid out an implementation schedule for that project, and based on going through the various steps for planning, design, permitting, allowing for bid time and construction and so forth, we estimated a project timeline plant for several reasons. One, there appears to be land available and space available at the plant. In talking with staff there, we could take advantage of using the outfall for brine disposal. And it also was a semi-centrally located central location to serve the agencies, because then we have to consider how to distribute and convey that treated product water back to the three various agencies. So those were some of the considerations. But the treatment plant itself, as far as housing a desalination plant of this size, the footprint is relatively small for the size of project that we're looking at. There is space available. It's really just a matter of designing the project to meet some of the site and piping issues that are associated with the plant. Things like power feed, yard piping, and then how we can take advantage of the outfall were all key considerations for the water treatment plant. So, and then, of course, as I had mentioned, how to then deliver water also to the various agencies. And as part of this study, we looked at not using the Lopez distribution system this time as to convey water back to the agencies, but to try to get it directly back to the three agencies as directly as possible. And that would be through the closest point of connection to their existing respective water systems. And that cost was rolled into the overall cost for the project and study. One of the key considerations, as I mentioned before, is water supply. So we took a look at how we would take or how we would receive the supply water to run the desalination plant. And of course, there's a couple of means. One would be to take brackish water locally, and that has an advantage of requiring less energy to treat. You have less salts to remove. And doing a seawater intake project, you have to have, there's many other considerations, especially impacts to aquatic life, impingement of various fish and all the various species, and then it's also a lot more difficult to address all those issues and get it permitted. So as we took a look at those two options, we felt that a well gallery intake was probably the most feasible option of the two as far as getting water to the plant. Of course, we still feel that there's some additional studies that need to be done on that. We do know that there are studies currently being done throughout the state via some Prop 50 grant monies to study that very option of intake and possibly also creating another potential issue of seawater intrusion by pulling more water in further into the aquifer. So, but both of those would still need some further study, but we, based on the information that we reviewed and agencies that we contacted, a brackish water technology, a beach well intake seemed to be the most viable option, and that is the option that we costed out in our alternative. So I'm not going to get into the details of the actual process for the reverse osmosis plant, but what we did look at was what we call a single pass type system. In years past, you a lot of times you need a double pass through of your water to actually achieve the product water that you need. Today, that's not really required to meet water quality objectives. And they also now are able to take that very high-pressure reject water, recapture the energy, and turn that back into your plant. So the energy efficiency of RO plants has really improved over the last several years. So we felt that in regards to some of the permitting issues for a desal plant, as you know, there are a number of plants throughout the state that are currently being planned. There's a number of permitting issues that varies from location to location, but in general, it's a matter of really just kind of going through the process and getting the permitting done. As part of our implementation plan for the desalination project, we just allowed a little bit more time for that aspect of the project anticipating that there may be some complexities along the way that we just need to allow a little bit more time and also probably a little bit more cost to the project to just make sure that we've accounted for that in our study. So in our discussions with Coastal Commission, they generally permit plants of this type fairly routinely. Their feedback to us is that the permit process would be relatively easy. Just how easy that is, it was kind of hard to really get a clear answer from them. I anticipate it would still be a lengthy process, but it might be fairly simple, but there's probably a lot of review time associated with working with the Coastal Commission. But their main concern with permitting a plant of this type anywhere in California, a desalination plant, had to do with essentially making sure that water plant was needed to fulfill the existing. Their permitting process, as we understand it, is also fairly routine. The area of biggest concern is making sure that we deal with the ocean outfall, both in regards to the capacity of the outfall, the dilution and mixing factors in regards to getting the water out of the diffuser into the ocean waters. And so those are some other areas that need to be looked into a little bit further. And those issues kind of will get addressed really more in a detailed design phase. So those are some of the issues that need to be addressed as we move along the way. So similar to the Nacimiento project, we went through overall capital costs for the project. We estimated permitting and environmental costs. We put in estimated annual O&M energy costs, and then did a 20-year life cycle analysis. And what we ended up finding is that a desal project of this nature and size we estimate to be somewhere on the order of about $2,600 per acre foot. That cost could be a little bit higher, it could be a little bit lower, but we feel it's a pretty good planning level number at this time for comparison purposes, especially relative to the Nacimiento project. So I'm going to just close right now real quick and just kind of give you a recap and then open it up to further questions. As I just mentioned, the desal project, we're estimating total life cycle cost for that project to be somewhere on the order of about $2,600 per acre foot. Compared that to the Nacimiento project, we estimate that more on the order of about $3,800 per acre foot. The driving cost factor on the Nacimiento project is the magnitude of the project and the nature of conveying raw lake water such a long way. It's coming a long way, some 60 miles from Lake Nacimiento to its terminus here at the Lopez plant. So that was a big key factor to the cost. If you compare the capital cost of implementing either of those two projects, the Nacimiento project also has a significantly higher capital outlay compared to the desal project. We estimated initial capital costs for Nacimiento water project somewhere on the order of about $30 million and compared to about $17, $18 million for the desal plant. So that was also a pretty significant difference between the two. The Nacimiento project is similar to state water in that you have to plan for, we felt, somewhere on the more on the order of about 7 years to implement a project of this nature. So, and with that, I'm finished and would be happy to answer any additional questions.
Morro Bay, Diablo Canyon, and Santa Barbara all have desalination plants, don't they?
That's correct.
Yeah. Are they being used at this time?
Yeah, I don't know the exact status of all of them. I believe Morro Bay is currently operating. I know they've gone through a number of renovations recently on the project, but I believe it's being used fairly routinely.
The technology that's transpired since these plants have been put in place, has it improved?
Yeah, the technology for the membranes, the efficiency of the process has improved somewhat over the past year or so. I think if you look at some of the existing plants that have been around for quite a while, as those membranes or useful lives are up, they're continually improving on their productivity and effectiveness. So, but yeah, the technology has improved somewhat in the past decade, certainly.
Okay. Any idea what it cost Morro Bay when they put their plant in?
You know, I don't. I can come back to you with some information on that and speak with Bill Boucher and some folks there and try to get some additional information on that.
Great.
Anyone else?
Mr. President, where we are this evening is our partners in this project, the City of Aurora Grande and the City of Grover Beach, have determined that they will continue to keep the Nacimiento project as a backup, but they would like to enter into a joint agreement to seek grant funds to continue the evaluation of the desal portion of this evaluation. The grant application would be a joint application from all the parties, and I strongly recommend that Oceano be one of those parties. Again, there is no final commitment. If we get at any point during the course of this evaluation, we determine that we want to cease our participation, we can do that. But where we are at this point, the decision point right now is to join with the City of Aurora Grande and the City of Grover Beach in filing a joint grant application for the continued evaluation of the desal.
Okay, thank you.
I was going to say, Mitch, if I might, too, just add to that. Yeah, it's what they call this next phase is what they call the funding study for these. Then the further next step can be taken in regards to the funding and preliminary engineering analysis for the project. Certainly that there should be enough money available to fund the study by grant, so there should be very little impact to the agencies in regards to taking that next step.
One of the things about a Prop 50 grant application is the more entities that are involved, political entities that are involved in the application process, the better your chances of a successful application are. They're looking for cooperative and collaborative efforts. So that's why I recommend, again, that we consider joining in with our partners at the sanitation district.
Okay. Mitch, is there a reason why PISMO is not involved with this?
PISMO, their analysis is they do not need any more water. They have all the water they need.
They're not going to build any more houses?
All I know is in discussions with their city engineer, they feel they have enough water to build out. Our water master plan indicates that our equilibrium point comes in the year 2023, and our build-out comes in the year 2033. Somewhere along the line, we are going to be seeking supplemental water. Pismo Beach, Mr. Delzite has indicated that the city of Pismo Beach has sufficient water supplies to meet their needs.
Would there be room for them if they changed their minds and want to come back in? How long would they have in the process here?
I don't see why they wouldn't be allowed back in.
Okay.
If there becomes a four-person operation, of course, that would certainly be contingent upon the stakeholders to date, authorizing that change in position, because, the City of Aurora Grande, City of Grover Beach, and Oceano were involved in this on the ground floor. The other issue is that the joint ownership of the wastewater treatment plant is where the site is projected to be sited. Pismo Beach is not a member of the South County Sanitation District.
Okay.
Your answer, the short answer is
that's
I, don't,
great answer.
I don't know.
That's a great answer. I won't ask you the rest of the questions.
It might be sort of parallel to the Nacimiento project and that on their capacity needs. So the way that it's set up as far as what those costs are, they take a look at the environmental costs, the design costs to date, the planning, all the planning costs that have been collectively spent on the project, and those costs are then also, share of those costs are passed on, and that cost is included in our study as well as far as estimating overall cost of the project. So it'd be essentially kind of buying into it retroactively.
I had one question on the desal plant. How many acre feet would it produce annually?
Well, Yeah, based on the collective input from the agencies, we looked at sizing a plant to meet 2,300 acre feet per year.
So that would be comparable to Massimino then.
And that would be the day-to-day output of that plant. So obviously you design it for a firm capacity of 2,300 acre feet, which is I think approximately 2 MGD thereabouts. And but you build into it enough redundancy and so forth for maintenance when you need to pull a membrane out of service and so forth. But you'd have a firm capacity of 2,300 acre feet per year.
Would it be feasible at all for like Napomo to join in on this? Possibly. I understand they are having some water problems down there.
And
increasing the acre feet production.
Yeah, I would think it could be considered. Again, we'd have to take a look at that, and then of course it would the magnitude of the plant would grow somewhat, but we'd have to take a look at what their needs are, and see how that would fit into the study. And one other area of taking that next step on the funding study could be looking at other alternative sites, in regards as far as where we would put a plant. So.
I could probably answer Bill's other question, his earlier question about the plant at Diablo Canyon. That operates successfully and has for several years, and it provides all the domestic water for the plant plus some makeup water for plant systems.
Yeah. They've got a lot of excess energy there, I think, to recapture, so, yeah.
Okay. The brackish water that comes out of this, is that going to be... that's going to be sent out into the ocean?
Right. What we would take a look at doing is taking the brine or the reject and then taking that out through the jointly owned outfall between City Pismo and South County Sand Districts. So it's a shared outfall between the two agencies. I forget the split as far as their capacity, but we took a look at the available capacity remaining in that outfall relative to what we think their future build-out capacities of the plants, or respective treatment plants are. And there is sufficient capacity hydraulically in that pipeline, although during wet weather, extreme wet weather conditions, it would be kind of squeaking by, so to speak. So we may want to take a look in those cases. Probably 99% of the time, you have more than enough capacity to get that brine out the outfall. But you may need to take a look at some things like a equalization basin or something off the back end of the desal plant to possibly give you a little bit of holding flexibility during wet weather and storm events.
Yeah, it would seem to me that would be the bottleneck in the system at this point, because we are either installing or have installed pumps now onto both the Pismo plant and the South County plant to pressurize that line out into the ocean, because gravity feed is not enough anymore for the capacity needed. And the plant still has another 1 to 2 million of growth in outfall before it has to be expanded. So, the environmental concerns for putting new outfall lines are increasing outfall lines is pretty stringent from what I understand, which is why Pismo was hooked into ours and didn't replace or try to repair the one that they had when they lost it in the storm. So is this going to be a problem down the line for the functioning of this plant? I mean, is it going to be still possible to do something?
Right. Well, I think it certainly warrants some additional consideration, and based on the our evaluation and looking at the peak hydraulics of that pipeline, like I said, there is capacity available, but it is fairly marginal. So, and that's why I think we would need to build in a little flexibility to that plan as we take a closer look at that outfall.
You mentioned it's primarily when the wet weather is, when we have the wettest weather, when the outflow would be the hardest to push out.
Right.
So ultimately, at that time of the year, we're probably not going to be using the desalination plant anyways.
Possibly. And that's one of the other things that can be done, is you can cut back on your production snapshot when we're at peak hour wet weather flow, and that outfall hydraulically is rated at about 16 million gallons per day, peak. So, and based on what we, the information that we have and what we see as far as future build out, plus wet weather peaking factors, you know, there's still a sufficient capacity, but like I said, it's not by a large margin. So, yeah.
Okay. Anyone else?
Well, I'd suggest that we take the staff's recommendation and go forward with this seeking grant monies to further this possibility of desalination with Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any additional comment?
Good question.
It's not public comment. I haven't called for public comment. Could we have a vote, please?
You need to do public comment.
Before the vote?
Yes, so.
Public comment have to come before the vote? Okay. We are now in public comment.
Sir, you mentioned regarding the Coastal Commission that one of the requirements is it must fulfill existing infrastructure and that there seemed to be an issue with growth that might impede the permitting process. Now, Mitch mentioned a build-out figure, years of 2023 and 33. Do you have any more information along the, I'm just concerned about the permitting process. If growth is a problem, could you elaborate?
Certainly. Yeah, the information and feedback that we got from the Coastal Commission is that they support desalination projects in general when they are used to satisfy water needs for the current land use designations in the coastal zone. If you were to implement or try to implement a project that would be considered growth-inducing and possibly densify or change the land use in the coastal zone that may be, you know, detrimental or more than what Coastal Commission would want to see, that's where they would have an issue with it in regards to a project. They probably would not be supportive of it, but they certainly are supportive of projects that are consistent with current land use elements.
Sorry. Any additional public comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Anyone else have anything to say before we go to vote?
I'm concerned. I see that the item on the agenda tonight is receipt of a report. I don't see anything about taking action on
council. If he has a different opinion, that what we're doing is we're agreeing to continue the process, to continue to evaluate. We're not building anything at this time. Just continue to evaluate the feasibility of a desal.
Okay. So this would just be a voice vote.
No money's being spent.
No.
Okay. So, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries 5-0. Okay, moving on to item number 6. Okay. Mitch, you want to introduce this or Mike?
Yes. It is traditional for the board of directors to recognize the firefighters who, in the opinion of the community firefighters, have contributed the most to the department during the course of the previous year. Annually, the OCSD board of directors has acknowledged and recognized major award recipients. Chief Steinhauser is prepared to recommend to the board of directors the adoption of resolution honoring the firefighter of the year, the OCSD Fire Department Rookie of the Year, the recipient of the Manuel Vargas Award, and the recipient of the Chief's Dedication Award. Once adopted by the board, the resolutions will be framed in accordance with tradition policy and presented to the firefighters at a subsequent board meeting. Chief?
I'm introducing the names. in our annual awards dinner that we had about 3 weeks ago, the Firefighter of the Year was recognized as Devin Meister. The recipient of the Rookie of the Year was Brian Fukuhara. And the recipient of the Manuel Vargas Award was Daniel Sesic. And the recipient of the Chief's Dedication Award was Craig Angelo.
Okay.
Mr. President, after public comment and board comment, these can be taken in bank. You don't need a separate motion for each resolution.
Thank you. No public comment? Hearing none. Bring it back to the board. Okay. Any questions, comments from the board? Okay.
Mr. President, I'm 2005, and to Craig Angelo for his selection as recipient of the Chief's Dedication Award during 2005.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President, Lookout?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
President Dahl?
Yes. Okay, item number 7.
Item number 7 is our continuing disclosure of the emergency declared by the Board of Directors concerning the cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water mains after the December 22, 2002 earthquake.
Okay. Public comment? Okay. Hearing none. Board comment?
I'm again concerned. I think Director Angelo expressed this concern at the last meeting that this emergency seems to be getting a little bit long in the tooth. And after 2 years plus now from the earthquake, I note that virtually all of our repairs have been completed and the money is in negotiation for doing that work. I would wonder about the possibility of getting into protracted discussions if there was a leak to spring somewhere in our system 2+ years after the earthquake.
One of the reasons why we continue to have this on the agenda is that the recommendation of the Office of Emergency Services with the state, who is, serves as our intermediary with FEMA, also during this evening's item, written communications, I have some fairly good news that we received a letter from the county that we have been favorably recommended, but it's not a grant award, it's just a recommendation at this point, the receipt of $322,126 in grant funds to be used for our sewer system. But we won't know this until September of 2006 if it will be granted or not. We certainly can, you know, call an end to the emergency. We would be doing so, though, at against the direct recommendation of the body that's intervening for us with FEMA. So it's certainly, you know, the
second roll call, please.
Director Angelo.
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
President Dahl?
Yes. Okay, administrative items.
First item is the financial statements for the period ending December 31st, 2005. Oh, no, no, please. Be our guest.
Okay, these are the financial statements through December 30th. At this point, we have collected $1,601,304, and our expenditures to date were $1,774,378. This includes, of course, contributions from the restricted reserves in order to cover what looks like an excess of expenditures over revenue. So the net result is an excess of revenues over expenditures of $374,905.
Do we want to take these individually or as a group? The rest of the reports?
Receive and file.
Yeah. If there's any questions, basically the front page is the summary of the reports and the details of the reports for the following pages.
All right. Then public comment on this item? Okay. Then any questions or comments from the board?
It looks like we've transferred quite a bit more than the shortfall of revenues to expenses. Is there a particular reason for that, or am I missing it?
I don't think I quite understand.
Okay, we our revenue was $1.6 million.
Okay. And we transferred $547,000.
Right.
That's all been by board approval. I mean, the board has authorized all of that, all of those transfers. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was just noting that it looked like we had, you know, excess revenue transferred out of the restricted reserves.
But $547,000 is covering the actual expenses of those, basically the water and sewer.
So that would be the Fountain Avenue and Juanita McCarthy and
the wet one. District's in good financial condition. So.
All right, any public comment on this one? Okay.
Actually, there's the last line there should read total balance funds on deposit as of 12/31/2005.
Any questions, comments from the board? Okay, we'll receive and file on that one. Okay, just 8C, district representatives, consideration of appointment to the Airport Land Use Commission and the Water Resources Advisory Commission. What I felt, well, let's go to public comment first. Any public comment on this item? What I felt would probably do is, since Bill, you can't do the airport.
According with Alex's letter to me, that would be a Brown Act violation.
That's fine. And what I think we can do is, we'll switch the airport land use and the RAC, where you have the RAC, and then we'll put in
RAC.
Yeah, Water Resources Advisory Commission.
That wasn't good for me though.
Okay. Well, we. We can put you on it, and then we'll have an alternate for Mitch, and then just if you want to go, you go. If you don't, you have the alternate. You just tell the alternate, and he'll go.
And, Mitch, you get to go.
Yeah. And we'll do the same with the Airport Land Use Commission. Jim, if you want to take, you can take that, and then I'll serve as the alternate unless somebody else will. And then if you can't go, you just let me know, and I'll go.
That's fine.
Okay. And so I'll need a motion to for that to accept that those appointments.
So moved. Everybody agrees with it.
Second.
Okay. Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, so carries 5-0. Okay, moving on to 8D, district travel policy. Mr. Cooney.
Okay, it has been proposed that the district travel policy be amended to include, quote, directors be reimbursed after the fact for travel expenses of mileage and per diem. The district is in sound financial condition. For this agency to continue to be prosperous and best serve the citizens of the community, travel to educational conferences and out-of-district meetings, working opportunities afforded attendees is imperative to more effectively manage the operation of the district. Recently, the state legislature has made certain training mandatory for all directors. Current travel policy allows for mileage at the current ISR rate and per diem to be paid prior to the commencement of authorized travel. Not all current directors, and without a doubt, those who will be elected to the Board of Directors in future years, will find themselves in the financial position to fund district obligations out of their own pocket. To require a director to advance payment for bona fide district obligations will place a chill on their ability to attend needed and obligatory training and meetings. The district and those that the Board of Directors represents will be the losers should such a policy change be put into place. Should your board determine that a district policy needs to be amended, the amendment will need to be introduced and then brought back at a subsequent meeting for adoption. The recommended action before your board so by board discussion, public comment, motion, second, and voice vote, retain the current district travel policy unchanged.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment on this item?
Of course, it would be customary for the district to prepay expenses, motel, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think there's any question. That's traditionally done. Unfortunately, on this district, there's been abuses with regards to travel expenses, i.e., directors canceling without notice right now. I record about $874 that is owed to this district right now because of the abuse of this particular item. And it's too bad. It's a matter of good faith, goodwill, and sticking to the agenda. If you're supposed to show up at a conference, then you better show up and not stick money in your pocket. Okay, thank you.
Any other public comment? Okay, bringing it back to the board. Any discussion?
I don't really have a problem with the way it's currently being done. I think if what I'd be more interested in seeing is, which would be contrary to what Mitch read, is you know, maybe we should look at how many seminars each board member should be allowed to go to, as well as staff, like in a 12-month period or something like that. I would be more in favor of doing something like that than changing the travel policy that we have right now.
This item was brought up was not to discourage travel and certainly not discourage training for directors, which as the general managers indicated, certain training, importantly among that would be ethics training for all directors, is mandatory now under state law. The issue was not with people attending training, rather it was with people taking the cash advance and then not attending training, and in some cases not reimbursing the district for that for 3 months in one case and for a little while out in another case. So it's not an issue of attending training, it's an issue of repeatedly not attending training and the use of district funds in the meantime that is the issue. And there was no other way to bring this up. There was no other way to that anyone seemed to take an interest in it. So I asked that it be brought up in this manner of the travel. We're only talking about per diem and mileage, that would be advanced by the directors and then received after the fact. I do support Director Angelo's recommendation that perhaps a limit on travel for directors would be, and possibly staff, would be worthwhile.
Has it taken 3 months to acquire money back, Mitch, after travel? Is it a month or 2 months?
I don't recall that to be the case. I know that, you know, the only one I can recollect in my mind was an incident of a canceled trip, and I believe I had the check reimbursed the following Monday. But, I that's my recollection.
So did you guys make a copy for the files of a canceled?
It's in our cancer journal. I'm sure that Ms. Davis would be able to just dig it out very easily where the money went into the receipt, because we'd have to put it into our cash system.
Okay. Maybe is there a way that if this should happen in the future that, you know, if money is to be reimbursed, that you could make a copy of the check so that...
Not every payment that we would receive for reimbursement, just like in our utility bill, is made by check.
Oh, okay. Okay.
On a utility bill, for instance, we don't document who pays for it. Indicates if it's cash or check.
Oh, okay.
So they would always be able to view the receipt.
Well, I would think that in the case where mileage and per diem was advanced to a director that did not use the money for mileage and per diem, that the check should be returned uncashed. And I find it interesting that that didn't happen. And Mitch, your lack of recollection is interesting. Mine is that it did take 3 months on one case, and Mark Wampler is exactly correct that this district is still out $500 plus for registration at a convention that Mr. Dahl didn't attend.
Well, kind of talking about two different items, I believe. One, you're talking about a per diem for your travel, and another, you're talking about not attending a conference. And I can certainly understand how you might not be able to make I mean, you know, you have to sign up for those things, what, a month or 6 weeks ahead of time, and, you know, something could come up. I don't have a whole lot of experience at going to seminars, so I don't know the time frame so well. But it sounds to me like we're kind of talking about two different things here, and trying to marry them together, and it don't work if you marry them together. I mean, you distort the conversation or the flow of where we're trying to get here. You know, if a person can't make a conference, and, you know, I would hate to see it abused, but if it happens, it happens. I don't know where I'm going to be 6 weeks from today. I hope I know where I'll be, but I don't know where I'll be.
Anyone else? This is not something that is like a isolated incident. There has been in the history of this organization a number of times where directors have attempted or tried to go, try to get themselves trained, and things have come up to where they can't go.
Okay. And I think that'll happen in the future. I mean, people are going to become ill. People are going to have, job obligations. You know, as a matter of fact, I believe, and this is my recollection, that I was scheduled to go to a conference, but I had to cancel. It's the one in Monterey that I went with you gentlemen. Circumstances of the ERAF discussion, it was solely the Oceano Community Service District who moved and fought to protect the money of both police and fire protection agencies from being shifted to the state. So, you know, these things come up. I mean, you know, I guess I could be accused of wasting money going to a conference also and not staying through the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, it's sad that we've moved into that arena in here where it's anything we can do to accuse people of things. So, but
not accusing people of things. I think, you know, going back to the mileage, I can see where people can miss conferences, but just making sure that there's a public record of repayment of the per diem, I think that should be just acknowledged in a timely manner.
Well,
because I've heard from the public, you know, quite a little bit about the per diems not being repaid. So listening to the public, I want to make sure that, you know, we're doing the public's business here.
Well, one thing that we can do is on a monthly basis, we produce a financial statement of the district. If we have any accounts receivable for any outstanding monies, we can report that at that time.
So we could have that in our packet then?
Yes, it'll be a part of the financial statement that comes out every month. If there's
Great.
Any accounts receivable, you're first. but, I mean, you know, if there you want a public record of it, we can do that. If there's any, you know, if for an example, if a conference were to be scheduled during the month of January and if there was any accounts receivable left when we make our financial report in February for the month of January, we would report that.
That would be a worthwhile suggestion, I think. I also would like to see the directors and I do understand that instances would arise where directors would not be able to attend for health reasons or various other conflicts of schedule, and that does certainly come up. But I would again think that in that event, that money advanced to the directors should be returned uncashed.
Well, one of the problems with that is, for an example, I mean, and not to be argumentative, but operationally, if you get a check and you're and supposed to be leaving on Sunday, you'd go to the bank some.
Wasn't there a bill by Senator Ortiz regarding travel pay?
That didn't go anywhere.
That didn't go anywhere. But it was introduced through the legislature?
Yeah, it was introduced. It was a two-year bill. This is the second year. It dealt with district compensation, district director compensation. We pay what the statute allows for. Some districts, she used some district in, I think it was Fairfield, that the directors, you know, some of them were, you know, they were full-time jobs, basically, which was opposed, you know, which somehow they figured a way to get around the statute, and she was trying to tighten that up. I mean, there wasn't this wide range of abuse that she was trying to purport there to be. The Sacramento Bee, Fairfield being in the Sacramento Bee's district area, is not in favor of special districts. I don't think that the Sacramento Bee understands what special districts are. The Sacramento Bee has come out with editorials that special districts should be dissolved. You know, this just for a blanket statement. And Ortiz's bill dealt with some of those kind of issues and really constrained district board members from running their own business. And, you know, that's, you know, basically what you're talking about is major micromanagement from a legislative standpoint. And that's why the bill has been somewhat shelved. It really didn't deal with substantial issues. It dealt with sort of micromanaging special districts and constraining board members such as yourself from actually doing the business of your board.
I also think if she would have been successful with that, the next step was then to do cities, and then the next step was to do counties.
Yes, that is correct.
So that's probably why it was defeated.
A good one to defeat.
Anyone else?
Well, I would like to take this item right now and move forward with it, and I would like to move that we leave the travel policy as is for right now, and maybe we can relook at this at another date if there continues to be a problem. It sounds like we're going to put some things in place to monitor it and.
No.
Director Hill?
No.
Vice President Dahl?
Yes.
Can I interject something right now, President?
Sure.
Dahl? I was just looking. We all are required to go to ethics leadership. You know, that's a new state law. We have to go to it. There's a conference February 2nd. It's in Goleta. It's $59 a person. It's on here. That's the closest one. I would suggest that since we have to do this, that we would maybe choose that location. It's on your stuff today.
And some of us have businesses that they have to attend to, and that's a little bit short notice for at least my business. So.
Well, I mean, you can look at the other places.
Yeah,
it's just
already picked out the
further travel.
Yeah.
Isn't the sexual harassment workshop mandatory too?
Yes, it is for directors. For all, excuse me, not only directors, for all management staff also, directors and management staff.
Going back to your comment, Barbara, I don't think any of us attended the Templeton. Templeton's already taken place, right?
President Dahl did.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. But that would have been free to the district, Karen.
No, it wasn't.
No, it's 59.
Well, you know, it's like 30 miles instead of 35 miles instead of going to Goleta, and you wouldn't have to stay in a hotel.
No, it was $59 for the class.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, I mean, when I looked at these, I just thought, well, I'm going to go to Goleta because that's the closest.
Yeah, but that was also offered at Templeton.
No,
this is not sexual harassment.
Oh, okay.
This is the ethics training.
Oh, the ethics, okay.
Yeah. This is ethics.
Templeton had, what was the, it was sexual harassment, and what, there was one other up there, wasn't there?
That's it right now.
Templeton, okay.
Okay. All right, we're moving on to item number 9. And these are the reports by the district representatives. And I'll go first. All right, so. Under other, I just wanted to mention, since it did come up, get those streets paved at this time. As opposed to just having a patchwork done there. Also, I attended the sexual harassment workshop this on the 19th, so, and wasn't a whole lot more different than some of the stuff that I've attended in the past. But one of the things I did want to bring to mind is that sexual harassment is looked at more and considered more as far as what's in the mind of the victim as opposed to the offender. And any organization like the district would have to show an effort to correct any problems if there were any to arise. Okay. Also, I attended the Zone 3 meeting. Dean Benedict gave an abbreviated Lopez Recreation Area report. Dean reported that Lopez Lake has recently received some grant funds. They intend to use the monies to repave the marina parking lot and replace the boat launch ramp. Dean also reported that December 2005 revenue was up, but the number of visitors dropped off significantly from December 2004. Dean stated that 6.5 inches of rain fell at Lopez Dam area in the first few days of January. He reported that the rainfall increased the lake level from 67% capacity to 72% capacity. Dean reported that the latest lake levels can be obtained on the website slocowater.org, slocountywater.org. Dean then gave a progress report on the construction activities taking place at the water treatment plant. The contractor, Cushman, has been on the job for nearly 2 months now. They have uncovered a couple of surprises, but the work is still on schedule. Dean stated that due to the construction activities, one half of the plant is out of service at the time. January and February are the low water use times of the year, so the plant has not experienced any problems in keeping up with the water demand. At the present time, the contractor is installing lots of underground electrical conduit, and they have installed a bypass line direct to the membrane build. 31st, the rainfall year and the county budget year ends on June 30th, and the Department of Water Resources water year ends on October 31st. So all the different graphs of water use for the year, it gets a little bit confusing. Okay, Straith, you think her name is pronounced I can't pronounce it. But anyway, I apologize for that. But Straith, she gave an update on the 06-07 Lopez Zone 3 budget. She stated that the expenses in the Lopez budget are expected to increase 32% for the next fiscal year. This increase is primarily due to the construction expenses of the water treatment plant upgrade. In addition, the Zone 3 staff is recommending that two additional plant operators be hired as soon as possible. A short discussion followed on why two additional operators are needed a whole year before the new plant is scheduled to go into operations. Mark Hutchinson then gave an update on the progress of the habitat conservation plan. He stated that his hope that the various agencies involved, National Marine Fisheries, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, California Fish and Game, there's one more here, I didn't catch the other one. Okay, that we'll agree on the county's proposed low reservoir response plan. This is how much water gets let out when the reservoir is low as opposed to when it's full or within capacities or the needs for water usage. One part of the proposed plan will allow Zone 3 personnel to reduce the downstream release when the reservoir gets below the 20% level. Mark also reported that staff is investigating the use of radar at various locations to determine the amount of water flowing in Arroyo Grande Creek. Use of radar is expensive, but it is an innovative and non-invasive method of measuring water flow. We also approved the meeting schedule for the year along with the meeting locations. We looked at the debt service payment plan for the new treatment plant and under the different types of financing options. More information, 245. And then we had the another meeting for the Zone 1-1A Advisory Committee at 3 o'clock. The Swanson Hydrology Report is now out. This is it. We got one of the first copies. It's up at the front office for the public to view and look at. This study is basically shows the work that needs to be done. There's a biological study for CEQA that is not finished yet. The assessment engineer's report was not out at the time of this meeting Monday night, but was due out sometime either Tuesday or soon. The RCD is meeting today or tonight to review that report. That report will say who's in the who basically would be in the zone that would end up paying for this. February 28th, the item's going to be coming before the Board of Supervisors. That's all that I have to report at this time.
Excuse me, President Dell, can I ask a question on that?
Sure.
Just for the minutes. On the 28th of February, you said it's coming before the Board of Supervisors. Is that just the assessment engineer's report, or is that the entire?
I don't think that's the engineer's report. I think that's the just the whole zone 1A, the Prop 218 issue as to where it's going to go from here.
I think it's so that it can be put on the ballot.
That's correct. The Board of Supervisors would vote to put the 218 election on the ballot, which would be a mail ballot. Would be mailed to property owners in the district that was established by that engineer's report, and that would go out in March.
Jim, that just goes to the property owners, not the.
That's correct.
Residents.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be some education that's going to have to be done by the Zone 1A people, and that's the next step that they're. One of the next steps that they're working on. Anything else?
Just the one of the important points on that is that the proposal that they're looking at is a selection of one of the recommendations from the Swanson study, and I think it was 300.
Much, you know, like right now, what they're paying $5 a parcel. Will it say X dollars a parcel when they're voting, or?
I believe it will. I'm not certain what the exact wording of the proposition would be, but if I recall, the average proposal that the state had was somewhere in the order of $700 or $800 for a house. Bill, I think your house was there. You might recollect that what the amount was. There was a whole lot of like $500 or $600 assessments, which was 100 times what the existing assessment was.
Yeah.
And that's based on the $1 million a year that the state estimated it would cost. And
yeah,
this is like one third of that, so it's pretty significant savings.
Yeah, it is $350,000, and it is not quite the same boundaries as the original $5 that's out there now. The $350 is they're cutting it very, very tight in asking for that amount of money.
Did the zone increase or decrease, or just?
I don't know whether the actual size is increased or not. I know that there are some people that are in on the $5 applies to that the new one will not, and there's ones that the $5 doesn't apply to that will on this one. So it's changed a little bit.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do this kind of in a reverse order. We have not had our community enhancement meeting for this week yet, but I want to at least let the public know we're having it on Friday at 9 a.m. At that meeting, we're going to be talking about Oceano Community cleanup activity, parks and recreation, an update and operational plan, old business, but we're going to have items for future consideration. Moving forward with the community enhancement, this is our community, so I hope to have many people there. I'd like to see these personally in the evenings when we can get more people to attend. A lot of people have to work during the day, but this came to our general manager on short notice, so this is the best we could get for time frame. Parks and Recreation, President Vern Dahl and myself tomorrow are going to be discussing some issues with our county supervisor, Cacho, in the morning, and moving forward for a possible park in the future of Oceano. Halcyon Advisory, they met at the, I cannot pronounce the name of the lodge, Hiawatha Lodge. Very beautiful building, very historic and over there. It was just their first meeting. It was on the 19th of this month. Just beautiful. Great people over there. They've got a lot of interests. They're going to have a great advisory for the County of San Luis Obispo. They're a lot different than Oceano. I didn't really realize, you know, we have curb gutters, sidewalks. They don't. I hadn't been over there. It's beautiful. The trees are gorgeous over there. They had brownies. Brownies. Why don't we have brownies at ours?
Do you want to cook them?
No. Okay. So, Mark, I think, you know, you're the president, so brownies should be at your next meeting. Okay. Okay. Oceano Advisory. Where do I begin? As you're aware, last year was a very hectic year with the Oceano Advisory. We had a lot of bad publicity in the paper. There was a lot of issues that should have never came up. They were overextended. That was last year. But this year, I was a little bit surprised, but I came to the meeting and we got Mitch Cooney, who is representing the Kiwanis Club, came to the meeting. A little unexpected to me, but he came to the meeting. He was there for the Kiwanis. Barbara Mann, who's the president of the Kiwanis, came to the meeting representing...
Oceano Improvement Association.
The Improvement Association. President?
No, I'm not an officer in that.
Oh.
I was the only one that was willing to come.
I saw the article in the paper today where, under the letter to the editor, where you were, I haven't really quite, Governor-elect District 29, Kiwanis International.
That's correct.
Yeah. Congratulations very
Thank
much on
you
that.
Thank you very much.
And you're also the LAFCO,
I'm LAFCO chair.
Quite a few beautiful things. So
yes.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
At the meeting, the Oceano Advisory, also we had another new arrival, Gina Davis, our executive secretary here, Oceano Depot. So it was nice to have you guys come there. And it's... It was quite a meeting, and maybe Mark might want to say something. That's it for me.
Okay. Director Angelo?
Okay, on the fire committee, we're up to 59 calls already for the year. Engine 6192 is off to Hi-Tech for the repairs that from the damage that was done. Little fender bender it was in. We talked about the cost of recovery billing a little more. I don't know if I reported this last meeting or not, but if we were to have had this program implemented last year, we would have billed for about $27,000 worth of recoverable costs. And so we're going to go ahead and go forward they'll be coming before the board for formal adoption to go ahead and contract with Covenant Building Corporation. And so they will be doing a billing for us. The lease on the old fire station, we talked about that, and that will be coming before the full board at a later date. And there was some discussion about the flooding on Highway 1 as far as having the fire department budget expend some money in there and to try to correct that flooding. And it was the opinion of the fire chief and the fire committee and general manager all that was not the responsibility of the fire department to do drainage or flooding, and that would be referred back to the county. And that's about the extent of our fire committee meeting.
Okay. Director Hill?
I attended no additional meetings. I do note that with regard to the issue of emergency response south of the Paso Robles and 13th Street intersection, that last year when that culvert was cleaned out by our district crews, that it was done such that the fire department trucks would be unimpeded in getting through that intersection. I know a lot of people in the community who live south of that intersection are concerned about the timeliness of our emergency response through that intersection when it floods, which might be a prime time to have auto accidents or something like that happen south of that intersection on Highway 1. And they're concerned, as I am, about our response time capabilities. And if you have to put the brakes on an emergency vehicle and slow down, the seconds just tick by, and that's less timely response to an emergency. So I'm quite concerned about that. I think the people of the community are, from what I'm hearing, are pretty well fed up with passing the buck to the county and everything else, and they'd like to see something done to see that flooding ameliorated. Hopefully we might reconsider that as a potentially viable thing to do for the district.
So are you suggesting that the district cleans that out there?
If our emergency response could be improved by having that particular culvert cleaned out, I think it would be in the best interest of the community to do that.
I think a problem we face in that is there's other places in this district that have the same problem. I mean, we would basically be taking over, without any kind of funding or authorization, flood control. I mean, we have Honolulu, we have Fountain, we have Security Court. I mean, all these places, we have equal amounts of water using that argument would impede our ability to get there. Our fire department has been stationed at 13th and Highway 1 as their primary location for years, with trucks or engines which are less capable than the equipment that we have today. Today's equipment we have four-wheel drive vehicles with diesel engines, and a fire department which has indicated that they see no lessening of a response time because of water on any location within the district. So I mean, this
particular location is rather unique. There's a number of natural basins in the area that would require that have no natural drainage outlet, and they collect rainwater and runoff And the county's done quite a bit of study on that, and it is rightfully the county's responsibility to take care of that. Hopefully they will do that. I'd like to see the public facilities fees be reintroduced as immediately as possible, and drainage be one of the issues that the county would collect public facility fees to improve drainage through the various locations in the community. And I note that the public comment period for that public facility fee proposal is in process right now, and I would hope that the district would include that in their endorsement of the public facility fee collection, such that not only fire protection but drainage and street repairs improvements in Oceano could be collected through that county public facility fee. This particular location, however, is rather unique in that it has a culvert that allows the water to drain off, provided that it's cleaned out. And in some cases, weed abatement and abatement of the flammable material off the eucalyptus trees that has been collected on that property washes into the culvert and plugs it up. And it's a matter of just cleaning it out. There's no public work or other construction or anything of that nature necessary to do it. And it just seems to me that it's a rather simple solution. The property owner that owns that parcel was billed a very substantial amount for weed abatement, and there was a large administrative charge that went on top of that. That money could be used to clean out that culvert periodically, and it just distresses me that that hasn't been done.
I noticed the county, when they had the trees fall down over here on 4th Street next to the railroad tracks, they came out immediately and started removing the trees. And they're still over there removing trees. And that goes into a drainage basin over on 4th Street. Have you seen that?
That was the railroad.
Well, I've talked to the neighbor over there today, and he said the county's out there removing the trees now. They're removing the stumps. I think Gina's nodding her head. So did you hear something about that? So that, you know, it's like to see that little drainage basin being paid attention to by the county right now is a really nice benefit to the people of Oceano. And I'm sure that, you know, the county has an interest in Oceano. I hope.
Just one last little comment on that is I understand that some people have represented that we might have to go to LAFCO to get authorization to clear out this this culvert, but since Director Mann is the president of LAFCO, we might have a ability to get our problem looked into there.
I just run the meeting, Jim. Don't have any special pull. You would have to apply for a new power.
Well, again, I think that that could be covered under our responsibility to the community for emergency response.
My turn?
Yes, your turn.
Okay. The Sand District had our meeting last week. The great news is when we had the rains that our plant did not spill. We were one of the few sanitation plants that did not have a spill, and it was because of the new piece of equipment, the effluent pump. Did I say that right, Phil? Effluent pump, which worked great. And that pump and Pismo's pump, it kept the pressure equal, running stuff out the outfall line. So that was good. Both of those got on. when they noticed that it looked like maybe we would have a spill, they quickly switched on the new piece of equipment that had just been installed, and it brought it down just within a few minutes. So they were very, very happy with that. We'll have our audit report next meeting, I believe. The Sand District continues right now to expenses are greater than revenue coming in because of the major projects that are going on, but there are reserves there that they've saved over the years to take care of those problems. But I'll have the by the next meeting, I should have the audit report, the financial status to give you. Sand District is running well. They work really well over there. Dave gave the report on the fire committee. LAFCO was the day of the sexual harassment training, so I went to LAFCO rather than sexual harassment. We were considering the sphere of influence for San Luis City, and that took up quite a while, but the majority of the time were 15 people from Las Osas that came to talk about their problem, and they weren't on the agenda. This was just in public comment about how they, this were the people that are in power now, and they don't want their district dissolved, so they're very concerned about that. So a meeting that usually lasts about an hour was 2.5 to 3 hours long. So that was what happened at LAFCO. Oh, and the other thing is Avila Beach did get garbage. And, of course, they thanked Oceano because we were the ones that got it first. And so they didn't have any trouble. County did not fight them at all about the garbage. So that's my report.
Great. Any last things from any of anyone up here on these reports? Okay. Any public comment on the reports from district representatives?
Yes, Bill, I'd like to comment on, thank you for your report. I'd have to say, too, that when it comes to Halcyon and faith-based groups, you can say one word, and that's family. And brownies sound like a good idea. I likewise was very surprised, too, about our new members. And I'd like to also state just publicly, if I haven't before, that as Chairman of the Oceano Advisory Council, we do welcome all civic and service groups that are a benefit to our community, whether they be ethnic or religious or all groups that represent the good of our community. We want to have them be represented. However, it was very disturbing that the people that you mentioned had at that particular meeting for some reason decided to bypass our agenda and sit among us on the council and basically declare themselves to be members and to participate in the council meeting. And it was somewhat unnerving and pretty offensive to most of us without being recognized. And there was a place on our agenda to welcome new membership. And that we did. But I had to sort of sweat through the initial part, feeling somewhat embarrassed and bewildered about what was taking place. I felt, to be honest with you, the feeling of violation. And our bylaws are going to be reviewed, and we're going to be looking at possible violations of conflicts of interest. I feel it's, personally speaking as a person here, that those violations do exist. And we are basically an all-volunteer committee, and I think it should stay that way. I personally feel that the representation on our committee should come from volunteers in the community. And I wish the best for these particular OIA and the Depot Association and the Kiwanis. They're fine organizations. I just would like to see better representation, and I'll be talking more about that later. Thank you.
Any other public comment on the reports from district representatives? Okay. Moving on to board member items for discussion. Anyone have anything?
I have nothing.
Nothing.
I have a couple concerns. Our public comment was taken off at the end of the meetings, and it was just last year when we sat up here, and I think we all voted to not have public comment past 10 o'clock, but we wanted to have it before, and it wasn't an actual vote, if I official vote, but it was official vote. We wanted to have it before the it was important to us to have it at the end, and the public's comments should be noted as, you know, things transpire. 1997, we had public comment at the end of our agendas. Looking back at some minutes I ran across the other day. Vern, you put it back on when you became president? Or it must have been taken off at one point and then put back on. So I have a concern about that. I personally would like to see it at the end. I'd also, you know, in the future, I'd like to see director's items discussion, and maybe we could put that on the upcoming agenda for both of these so that maybe the whole board could vote to have those for the public or not to have them for the public.
What we would have to do is do a change of the rules of order. The rules of order are very specific that the president directs the way that the agendas...
That's decided by the president?
Yes. So if you want to change the rules of order, we could do that, but it's... I can't find the exact language. You kind of caught me flat-footed here, but the he/she shall determine. This is a rule 2.4. He/she shall determine the order in which the agenda item shall be considered for discussion and the actions to be taken by the board. So if that is right now, rule 2.4, it's at the discretion of the president.
So it would have to go back to a vote to change that?
It'd have to be a potential rule change of the rules of order.
Well, I'd like to try that then. I think it's, you know, in the best interest of the community to have public comment at both sides. You know, our prior directors have chosen that in 1997 and prior. We get a lot of feedback from the public, you know, and that helps us with the community here of Oceano.
If that's a consensus of the board, then the appropriate thing to do would be to put it on a regular board agenda for full discussion by the board, provide staff some direction if you want to change anything as a matter of board direction, and then we could come back to you with a proposed specific text amendment to the rules of order, if that's the board's desire.
Is there anything else, Bill?
No, that's it for me.
Director Hill?
I'd like to echo Director Bookout's comment. I think, President Dahl, you do the community a disservice by eliminating the public comment at the end of the meeting. For myself as a board member, public comment is important to me. I'm concerned about the views of the public and their interest on various items in the community. I find that very important to my job as a board member. And again, I believe you do a disservice to the community by eliminating the second public comment. Also, I don't believe that the insignificant amount of time taken up with the first board member's director's comments at the beginning of the meeting amounted to that much of a streamlining of the operation. Again, I note that the public facilities fees, it's going in on 9 months now that our fire departments receive no money from public facility fees. There's significant development works going on in the community, and my understanding is that our fire department is losing significant funding that would otherwise be paid under that fee. And again, I would encourage the district to recommend to the county and the county to take up the issue of public facility fees, not only for fire protection issues, but also drainage and street improvements in the unincorporated communities. Finally, noting several comments that I've had about the Oceano Advisory Committee meeting the other night, I'm somewhat ashamed, I have to say, of the apparent. I wasn't there, but all the comments that I've had have come down to pretty much a consensus of opinion that that our senior district staff and the one director that attended that meeting acted in a in an unprofessional manner, and I'm sure that we wouldn't appreciate it if members of OHAC came up here and sat in our seats during our meetings. And I'm somewhat ashamed of the behavior of these people at this meeting. And I hope that doesn't happen again.
I will make one comment. I wasn't going to say anything, but the bylaws of Oceano Advisory Council states that the Oceano Improvement Association and the depot are members of that committee and have always been from the day it was put in, whether they had been attending or not. That's all I have to say. Sorry that you're ashamed of me, though, Jim.
Is that all, Director Hill?
Let's go.
Well,
that's it.
It was a long year last year on OHAC, and we ran through a really rough time, and it would have been nice to have more participation. And I see frustration with that because of that.
Well, maybe everybody thinks things are going to be better this year. Maybe that's why people are willing to take part in it again. Their problems seem to have been cleared up.
Okay. Just to address the agenda a little bit, I've pulled agendas from Avila Beach, Heritage Ranch CSD, Napomo CSD, Templeton CSD, County Board of Supervisors, Airport Land Use Commission, LAFCO, Central Coast Water Authority. It is very typical for government agencies to have one public comment on the agenda, usually at the beginning of the meeting. I did put two of them on when I became president 2 years ago, and it was because there was a feeling at the time that by a couple members of the public that they wanted to talk again and felt that it would increase attendance. It has not. We're going to go back to the way it was streamlined unless we have a vote from the board otherwise. And we did not vote to have a second public opinion. What we voted on was that we would not have a second public opinion after 10 o'clock. We did not vote on having one.
So we voted to adjourn by 10 o'clock.
Yeah, but it was important to us at that time, looking at the tape, that the public's comment was important to us at that time. I still feel it's important, so
okay.
I would like to agendize that for the next meeting.
We need a consensus of the
board. If there's a consensus of the board. I, for one.
Well, I think that I don't think it's necessary myself. We have our rules of orders and how we do these meetings. We will be going over those soon, and if we can address them at the time that we're going to be going over those rules, as opposed to having a separate item on it.
I'm not really interested in changing the rules of order, but I might take this opportunity to ask you to reconsider and put the second public comment on. It's up to you according to the rules, but it might be in the best interest of everybody just to put it on there. We're going to waste more time dealing with the issue than the issue is really going to take to deal with. And that would be my plea.
Okay, I will take it into consideration. Okay. If there's no other board member items, go on to consideration of the warrants.
I move to pay the bills.
Do I have a motion? Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any public comment on the warrants?
Yes, Mark Wampler again. Oh, I'm sorry. AGP guys. Sorry.
Mitch had mentioned some time back, several months, well, it had been a couple months ago, that there was a $542 registration fee. Claims it was returned. I want to know if that $542 registration fee was returned. And I was confirmed that there was a three-day cancellation. I twice was told by those representatives that that would not be returned. So I would like to know what the district is going to do about that loss of $542. Okay, thanks.
Point of order, weren't we dealing with paying the bills?
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether he was talking about a bill or not at the time. Okay, any other public comment on the warrants? Okay, bringing it back to the board. Any comments before we go to a vote? Okay, all those in favor of paying the warrants, say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries 5-0. Any written communications?
Before you, I have placed a slightly revised agenda for the January 30th meeting at the South County Regional Center. That'll be at 7 o'clock concerning fire service consolidation roundtable. As you notice that all directors and are listed on the agenda for attendance, as well as all city council members and mayors of the of our other cities. This is just the revised copy has been posted, and call it to your attention. I guess I will again indicate that we have been notified by the county that we are being recommended favorably for a sum of $322,126 to repair district sewer lines. This is not a notification of a grant award, but just notification of a favorable recommendation at this time. We will notify approximately September if we do receive the grant.
Anything else?
Yeah, right.
All right, meeting's adjourned.